young, I'd listen to the radio.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Bob Trout speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is Mutual.
This is ABC Radio Network.
Hi, and welcome to Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. John and Larry Gassman, two strange voices here. You've not heard us on this particular show, and you will from time to time. Not in any rotation, but whenever we have time and whenever they want to fit us in. In preparing for the show, we thought, let's do something that we haven't done that often before, although this did air on same time, same station twice, once in 1997 and another in 2014. How do I know that? Well, I was looking for some written information to supplement the shows that you're going to hear. So in Google, I wrote Flight 101, written by Jack Johnstone. And it took me to a website from Charles Reinhardt, who wrote a book 4 years ago called On the Air. Actually, it's called James Stewart On the Air. What makes this more interesting is that we've been trying to get him on the show to talk about that book for quite a while. And due to scheduling conflicts, it just hasn't happened. So on the website, it talks literally about how these discs came into Spurdvac's collection and mentions us and mentions what the show's about. Pretty much the same thing that I was going to talk about before I found his site.
So why don't we just play the blog as read by Ava to bring you up to date with what's going on, and then we'll play both programs.
When you listen to Flight 101, it will sound like a normal radio show, complete with music and sound effects. You'll hear the crackle and pops as the record player's needle moves through the grooves of the record. But this was not recorded to be used on the radio. Instead, Jimmy Stewart recorded this program for playback at a March 14, 1958, Airline Pilots Association convention. The script had been written by Jack Johnstone, who also produced the recording. Stewart and Johnstone had worked together before, with Johnstone producing Stewart's series, The Six Shooter. Johnstone later rewrote the script, calling it The Midnight Sun Matter, and produced it for yours truly, Johnny Dollar. It was broadcast on that program on May 25, 1958. Eventually, Johnstone gave the Stewart discs to S.P.E.R.D.V.A.C., the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama, Variety and Comedy, and they, in turn, have made the recording available to its members. Two of S.P.E.R.D.V.A.C.'s members, twin brothers John and Larry Gassman, played the discs on their same time, same station radio program on July 6, 1997, just days after Stewart's death. They played Flight 101 again on their program dated August 10, 2014. In the play, Stewart portrays Charlie Dent, the pilot of United 101, who is attempting to land in Los Angeles. He is having trouble getting the main landing gear of the plane to deploy. Jack Blake, played by Harry Bytel, is the dispatcher who relays information to Dent in an attempt to land the plane safely. For yours truly, Johnny Dollar, the pilot was flying a cargo of TNT to an Alaskan airport when he has an attack of appendicitis. At the time Jimmy Stewart On the Air was published, the Johnny Dollar show was the only source available, and we thought that the Stewart lot was basically the same. This has turned out to be a false assumption. We'll give you both productions and you can make your own comparisons. First, the Stewart recording.
Now, remember, this is not a radio broadcast. This was a recording done in front of United Airlines pilots at their convention, not broadcast, on March 14, 1958.
On the morning of October 31st, 1957, United Airlines mainliner Flight 101 made a routine position report to United Flight Operations at Los Angeles International Airport.
United 101 over Daggett on the hour, 17,000 descending.
Roger, United 101. Over Daggett on the hour, 17,000 descending.
The time is 7 o'clock. Exactly.
United 101 approaching Apple, changing to Los Angeles Center.
Roger, United 101. Approaching Apple, changing to Los Angeles Center.
The time is 7:03.
United 101, will you put the dispatcher on the air, please?
Okay, stand by one.
The time is 7:29.
Charlie, this is Jack Blake. Go ahead.
We're having difficulty getting our main gear down, so we're going to circle. Attempt to get it down by centrifugal force with 45-degree banks. You might get the crew chief to stand by. didn't get the gear down, I guess we're going to have to make a belly landing gear up. So we'll try and see what we can do and let you know. We have about 5,000 pounds of fuel aboard.
Okay, Charlie, I got all your remarks. Did you say the left main gear was up? Go ahead.
The right main gear will not come down. The tower advises that it appears to be the gear door is partially open, which may indicate it's jammed.
The time is 7:31.
Okay, Charlie, I watched you go over myself, and the crew chief was on top of the hangar. He also watched you go over. I talked to the crew chief and asked him if he has any suggestions. He said, no, the only thing he could think of right away quick is that you try to snap the gear out by a pretty good pull-up to give it some centrifugal force. Before we consider coming in for a belly landing, I'd like to use some of that fuel you got on board, and maybe some of our brains can think of something that can help you out.
Now, we're going ahead with the regular procedures as prescribed in the manual and whatever else we can think of. We'll give you another call.
Okay, Charlie.
The time is 7:33.
Charlie, this is Blake again. I talked to the crew chief, and I was up on the roof myself. Apparently, from the ground, it did not appear that the door was open on your right main truck. The gear appeared to be fully retracted. This was the crew chief's opinion also. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, one of our trips said the door was open as completely as was the left one. However, no gear on that one, so we're going to have to be sure that, we're just going to have to make another pass and have them confirm it definitely, and then we'll go on from there.
Okay, Charlie, for the information of the people who are worrying about your problem on the ground, have you attempted to shear the pin as outlined in the emergency procedures? Go ahead.
Negative. We haven't tried that procedure yet. We wanted to be sure that the doors were not jammed, partially closed, and perhaps make it impossible for us to get all of our gear up again.
I see. Okay, Charlie, if you work with the tower by making another pass over the field, they got some glasses in the tower. They may be able to see more than we will. We have no glasses here.
Okay, we'll do that. We'll go back to the tower and have them take a look. We want to confirm that we have our gear down.
Okay, Charlie. Before you go away, I have two comments. One, the hangar crew chief now advises that the right door appeared to be open about 6 inches. This is different from what I first heard on the telephone. Also, one of our senior captains is here in the office and has suggested that the gear might come down if you operated it as the speed brake. Go ahead.
We tried that once, but we'll give it another try and see what happens.
Okay, Charlie, we'll stand by.
The time is 7:55.
Give me the crew chief, please.
This is Blake again, Charlie. What was your request? Go ahead.
Okay, we'd like to speak to the crew chief if he's there. Well, I'll relay the message to you, and we can both talk together. It doesn't make any difference. At the present time, the gear, of course, won't extend. And we think the doors appear to open about 6 or 8 inches on either side. Now, we've attempted to shear the lockout or to shear the pins, and that also came up with negative results. However, we have got one other factor here. And that is when our gear handle is neutral, we get an unsafe red warning light.
Charlie, you have full hydraulic pressure. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's affirmative.
Okay, I'll relay this to the crew chief. He isn't in his office at the moment. I'll ask him to come up here so I can discuss it with you. Incidentally, Charlie, before I get off the horn, I'll tell you what we've been thinking down here. If it becomes necessary to make a belly landing, you'll be better off to do it at Riverside, out east of Los Angeles, because a very complete setup they have for handling accidents. That is firefighting equipment and whatnot. If that agrees with your thinking, well, you might think about it for a while.
How long are the runways at Riverside?
The runway there, Charlie, is 13,300 feet long. It's a strategic Air Force base out there, March Air Force Base.
Well, it sounds reasonable to us. I imagine the weather out there is pretty much the same as it is here, huh?
Yeah, weather's just about the same. As a matter of fact, you'd be able to go over there VFR. The current weather is ceiling estimated 9,000 broken with 15,000 overcast above. We've been in touch with them on the telephone. They have a bomber mission, which is scheduled for takeoff at 8:50. They say if we can possibly defer any action till that time, they'd be more than happy to take care of us if we went over there after 8:50. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, now in the interim, if there are any experts around who have some ideas we haven't tried, we think we've tried about everything. I don't know. It's so far no luck.
Okay, Chuck, we got everybody in the country aware of your problem. If anybody comes up with any idea at all, we'll pass it on to you right away.
Fine, okay. I'll give you a gas check in a few minutes.
Okay.
The time is 8:14.
Charlie, Don Chase, our chief engineer here at Los Angeles, would like to talk to you about your problem. I'll put him on the horn.
Charlie, this is Don Chase. On retracting the gear, does the red light still stay on? I mean, this gear, is it partway down and stuck?
When the gear is in the retract handle full up position, there are no lights on. However, in the neutral position, the red light is on. And in the neutral position, by observation from the cabin, the main gear doors are extended partially, not fully. Go ahead.
Have you tried up and down quite a few times to see if it extends any further anytime?
Yeah, we've tried it numerous times.
Well, I think I'd tried as many times as possible, Charlie. There could be something binding that may break loose. There's something. It comes off the latches all right, so it isn't the latch.
That's perhaps in some way damaged the mechanism so that we couldn't get the other gear, the left main gear, up. And we'd rather not jeopardize our completely gear-up landing by fouling the mechanism. However, we're going to try it again because from observation on the ground, apparently both doors open the same distance. We had various accounts, but it seems like the most reliable one now is that both doors, when the left main gear is down, are fully open.
Okay, Charlie, try it some more if you can. As long as you've got hydraulic pressure, you should be able to get the other gear up and nose gear up again.
Donnie, well, just a few more times. We'll see what happens here.
Okay, let me know.
Will do.
The time is 8:18.
We'd like to talk to the engineering man again. Actually, we got another factor involved here. In order to raise the gear from a down position, we have to depress the solenoid button or it won't come up. Unless we depress it, however, it does go down normally.
Well, Charlie, I think probably because that one gear hangs out a little bit, but I think there must be a cable jammed in that gear somehow because it comes off the latch okay if it hangs down any. So I thought if you could work it up and down a few times, you might get whatever is jamming it out of the way.
Okay, we'll try some more.
The time is 8:20.
Charlie, this is Blake. How's your fuel situation stacking up now?
We have about, we have 4,000 pounds.
Well, time is approaching, Charlie, when we probably ought to make some kind of a decision. For your information, I've been called by the military, and they've advised that they'll be unable to accept your airplane at Riverside because of explosives on the field there. As an alternate suggestion, they've suggested Edwards Air Force Base out in the desert. Muroc Dry Lake, they got a 13-mile-long runway out there.
Okay, well, I believe we'd better get over there and get our evacuation procedures worked out and get in conversation with the people over there. How many miles is it to Edwards?
In the neighborhood of 70, Charlie. They've got an Omni over there on 116.4. Just a moment here till I take a look at the chart. If you get to the Palmdale Omni, you can tune the Edwards Omni on 116.4. Edwards Air Force Base is southwest of the Edwards Omni. Looks to be about 20 miles. Go ahead.
We want to know the weather over there before we start out and go over there.
Okay, Charlie, I'll get a weather report and have it for you in just a moment.
Charlie, don't forget in case you had to put it down to ask them to foam the runway. That'll help your friction there on the initial contact. Yeah, okay, will do. Whoever that was, thanks a lot.
The time is 8:30, exactly.
Charlie, the last weather I have for Edwards gives a ceiling of 6,000 feet with very light rain. I got someone on the phone right now getting the current weather. I'll have it for you in a moment. In the meantime, we got a suggestion from the Douglas Airplane Company which may help. In similar instances in the past, they've been able to free a main truck by a procedure like this. If you feather the number 3 engine, And then just as you unfeather it, slam the gear handle down. The additional torsional effect that you get from unfeathering the engine as you put the gear handle down may free the gear. Would you like to try that and see what happens? Go ahead.
Roger, we're going to try that. But if there's any weather involved in our letdown at Palmdale, we're going to have a... We'll probably have a fuel problem now. We'll go ahead and try that procedure that was just suggested, and we'll see what we come up with.
Charlie, as you're pulling that engine feathering procedure, will you head out towards Palmdale? And I don't think if the weather will be any worse than 6,000 to 7,000 overcast out there, you should have no problem on the letdown at all. Go ahead.
The only letdown procedure we have for Palmdale in the manual is the low-frequency procedure. Is that correct?
I have a procedure in the Jepson manual here in front of me, Charlie, for Edwards Air Force Base. If you get to Palmdale and tune in the Edwards Omni, I can give you the rest of the procedure from here. The letdown's on a heading of 042 degrees from the Edwards Omni. Go ahead.
042 from Edwards Omni.
That's right. Letting down to the northeast for a procedure turn at 5,500. And long before you get to that altitude, you should be out under the stuff.
Okay, well, 101 will need clearance to Palmdale and Edwards. Go ahead.
Okay, Charlie, we'll get airways alerted to where you're heading. In the meantime, you can be trying the feathering procedure.
Roger, we'll try that right now.
The time is 8:37.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Well, it doesn't look like we're going to have enough gas to go over there and do the things that have to be done before we land at Palmdale, or particularly with the weather and the climbing up. We won't be able to climb up with the gas we have remaining.
Okay, Charlie, if you choose to do so, we'll prepare everything here for your landing in Los Angeles. Are you VFR now?
I think that's the wisest procedure because of the weather topping the mountains. We don't have enough gas to go into the climb and to get over there to have the proper time to do what should be done. I think we'd better make it right here at Los Angeles.
Okay, Charlie, we'll get everything alerted here at the field. I didn't understand. Are you VFR in the Los Angeles vicinity? Go ahead.
Roger, we are VFR in the Los Angeles vicinity, and we'll remain so.
Okay, Charlie. Ed Kasich's here in the office. He'd like to talk to you.
Okay, put him on.
Charlie, Norm Temper just called, and there's one more thing he'd like to have you try, and that is completely unload your hydraulic system and then try free-falling your gear. You get that okay?
I did that twice, once with the system pressure and the emergency pump, also with the normal hydraulic system. No luck. No luck with it.
You did then completely unload the system to zero pressure and then try free-falling?
Affirmative. We did that, and we'll do it once more.
All right, Charlie, fine. And then if you decide to land here and your gear is still up, give us as much warning as you can, because we're going to have to clear the field.
Well, we have definitely decided to land here in view of the weather and our gas situation.
How much fuel do you have left at the moment?
We have, about 1,600 pounds in respective tanks.
That's about 3,200.
A little bit more than that, about 35.
Okay, Charlie, you let us know how you make out on the unloading system, huh?
Yeah, we'll try again. And we're proceeding with the preparation for the passenger evacuation. Does anybody have any ideas about the approach in addition to what the book says? We'd appreciate any little tips here and there.
Stand by. We'll call you back.
Okie doke.
The time is 8:45.
What's the wind in L.A. now?
Wind is south, about 2 miles an hour. We've had very little wind through the night, Charlie. It's practically calm, just a light south breeze.
Okay, find out if it's recommended to land on the runway or on the side. I don't at the moment know the obstructions on the side, but find out what the experts say, will you?
Yes, sir.
And you might as well, as soon as you're prepared, you might as well let us know the runway that thinks best and expedient for us to use. We'll think about that, too, huh?
Okay, Charlie, I'll get all the dope, give it to you in a package in about 3 minutes.
Okay.
The time is 8:51.
Charlie, the tower would like the runway selection, whichever you prefer. 25 right, 25 left. Is that agreeable with you?
We'll take a look when we come over the field. In the event this thing slides off to one side or the other, I don't know which way it's going to go. We'll look for ourselves. I don't want this thing running into those airplanes in the ramp, if I can help it.
Okay, Charlie, if you want to try 25 left, they can put some foam on the runway and make it a little slippery for you. And all the equipment will all be lined up there waiting your arrival. Go ahead.
Okay, that'll be fine. We'll advise you shortly. We're continuing with the preparation for evacuation of the passengers, and they're all calm, cool, collected.
Okay, Charlie. Sounds like a good show.
The time is 8:55.
Hey, we want to confirm something we've overlooked here. Which flare should be pulled first? The book no longer includes it, and we just want to verify with someone on the ground.
Give me the question again, Charlie, a little slower, please.
Okay, but ask somebody there which of the flares you jettison first, the forward or the aft one?
Down in the
rear one. Oh, disregard the question.
Okay, Charlie, just before you said disregard, it was suggested that the rear flare should be jettisoned first.
Hey, Charlie, this is Ed Kesick again. Hello, Charlie.
Yeah, go ahead.
The Douglas Company just called. They'd like to have you on this gear handle business up and down. Throw it to the up position. But just leave it there for a second, and then slam it down and leave it down, say 30 seconds after you put it down. You get that, Charlie?
We just jettisoned both flares. They're free-falling now. Stand by one.
Roger. You get what I said about moving the gear handle again?
Okay, we're doing that.
Now, we don't want to seem in a position here of telling you all your business, but I guess we ought to try everything that anyone can think of. And we're going to have you land on runway 25 left, which is the instrument runway and a little bit wider.
Okay, 25 left. That's what it'll be, then.
Okay, and the only thing that any of us can think of on your question about passenger evacuation would be to get them close to the main door, inasmuch as you don't have a full load. I get them all back and then go ahead with your normal preparations for evacuation, having the doors trail and so forth and so on.
Yeah, we've already done that. We've moved them back to the rear end. Everything's been stowed away and they've all been advised of the procedures.
Okay, Charlie, we don't think of anything else, and you just give us your ETA touchdown and make it as much time as you can so we have the runway foam for you and so forth and so on.
Okay, fine.
And we'll tell you what part of the runway will be foamed, and, of course, I know you'll put it right down on it.
Okay, fine. We'll do our best.
All right, Charlie.
We're on time and a half, are we not?
The time is 9:00 exactly.
Now, this is Ed Kesick again. The base just called, and they have one more suggestion for you, and that's to completely unload your hydraulic system. Leave the bypass up when you have zero pressure, and then put your gear handle down and zoom your airplane. You get that?
Well, actually, we've run through that, Ed. We've tried that. But we'll do it once more, though. It certainly won't hurt.
Okay. Well, we hate to be giving you all this intelligence all the time, but if the base calls us, we pass it on to you for what it's worth. And you're the doctor, and you're the judge.
The time is 9:13.
Charlie, for your information, they're laying foam like crazy on the runway now, and from the progress they're making, it looks like they'll be completed in another 5 to 10 minutes. I talked to the tower operator, and they advised that the foam will last about 20 minutes. Now, assuming that they completed laying the foam at 25, it would mean that we should land not later than 45. If your information, the foam's being laid on the runway from the glide path shack west. Now, I don't know where you are in relation to the airport, but they're laying an awful lot of it down there. Go ahead.
We've taken care of just about everything in the airplane now, except opening the windows and trailing the ropes. And if I understand you correctly, the foam is being started or it's being laid down from the glide shack west. Is that correct? The glide path shack?
That is correct, Charlie, and they're still in the process of laying it. The tower advises that you land no later than 20 minutes after the job has been completed.
Well, you give us the word when it's completed, and we'll stay close by. We're going to make one low pass over the field and take a good look at everything, and then we'll come on in and land. Okay?
Okay, Charlie. We got your remarks. And the tower has just advised that there will be 1,500 feet of foam from the glide path shack west, and we can get more foam on it if you want it.
Well, why don't you check Douglas and see what they recommend? They're probably more expert on it than we are.
Okay, Charlie, we'll do.
Whatever's customary is okay with us.
Good boy.
The time is 9:20.
Hi, Charlie. Just wondered where you were and how everything looked to you as you went over the field. Go ahead.
We're zooming out here.
Okay, Charlie, I won't bother you again, although when you make up your mind when you're coming in, I'd like to know so that we can have everything really red-hot alerted for you. I'll pass on to you one comment from the Douglas Company, which they were really concerned about, and this is, do not, repeat, do not feather the engines.
Yeah, we got that before. We will comply.
Okay, Charlie, we'll wait to hear from you.
The time is 9:35.
We've opened the windows, finished preparation for emergency evacuation. We're all set. We're going to come back over the field now and make a practice pass at the field prior to the final landing.
Okay, Charlie. I guess I won't be talking to you anymore on this frequency then, but we'll monitor it. Now, you go to the tower frequency, and we'll be all set for you when you arrive. Good luck.
Okay. Thanks, Ed.
The time is 9:49.
A few minutes later, Captain Charlie Dent made a successful wheels-up landing. The aircraft was flying again for United in 3 days.
Well, there's been non-broadcast in front of the United pilots from March 14 of 1958. It didn't take long for Jack Johnstone to get the broadcast ready for yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
No, about 2 months later, he had it all cast and produced, and he couldn't use Jimmy Stewart because he probably would have cost too much in those days. So he changed the story around a little bit, with Johnny becoming the co-pilot. So we'll go back and listen to Bob Bailey now in the Jack Johnstone written program and the production from yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The Midnight Sun Matter from May 25th, 1958.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Bill Chadwick, Northwest Surety Company.
Howdy, Bill. How are things in Seattle?
Oh, not bad, Johnny, not bad. You tell me, have you ever fallen for the spell of the Yukon?
What are you trying to do, sell me some mining stock?
No, but there's a mine I'd like to have you take a look at.
Up in the Yukon?
Well, actually, it's across the border in Alaska. It's a gold mine, a big one, sitting on top of a rich vein. And, why don't you fly on out here and let me tell you about it?
Why not? Shall I bring my own pick and shovel?
No. No, Johnny.
Huh?
Just be sure you bring your gun.
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
And now, Act One of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Northwest Surety Company, Seattle, Washington office. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Midnight Sun matter. Item 1, $164.35, transportation to New York, then a mainliner through Chicago to Seattle. The pilot gave us a beautiful view of Mount Rainier and Puget Sound before we sat down, and at 4 p.m. I was in Bill Chadwick's office at 2nd Avenue and Yesler Way.
Oh, I'm glad to see you, Johnny. It's been a long time.
Yeah, hiya, Bill.
Yeah, hey, sit down.
Okay. Now, what was that crack over the phone about bringing along a gun?
Well, the men who moil for gold are a pretty tough bunch, Johnny. And sometimes it even goes for the management of a big mining operation.
Like what, for instance?
Like Universal Consolidated Mining Corporation.
Where's that?
It's north and east of Fairbanks.
Alaska? Huh?
Yes, even north of Fort Yukon. That means above the Arctic Circle.
And what's happened up there?
Now, the whole thing sits at the foot of a big glacier.
Oh?
No problem until recently. Now, through some freak of nature, that glacier is changing its course.
No kidding.
And from the look of things, maybe a couple of months, maybe a couple of years, or even 10 years. Anyhow, they seem to think that glacier is going to sweep down over the mines, the town, everything.
I see.
In which case, our company would have to pay for the whole loss.
An all-coverage policy, huh?
Yeah. And it's occurred to me, Johnny, suppose they've suddenly run out of that rich vein they found up there.
You mean that somehow they deliberately caused that glacier to destroy the whole operation?
It's a possibility, isn't it?
Well, a pretty far-fetched one, if you ask me. Change the course of a glacier?
A few sticks of dynamite carefully placed.
Oh, come off it, Bill. Did you ever see a glacier?
Well, why should one that's been following the same path for thousands of years suddenly decide to head for a few million dollars worth of well-insured property? Look, go up there and take a look, will you?
Okay, how do I get there?
One of the company's planes is taking off from here tomorrow morning.
They have their own airplanes?
Oh, sure, a lot of them. Big two-engine speedcraft transports. How else do you think they'd get men and supplies up there? Anyway, you can go along with him. Okay?
Okay, why not? Who knows? Maybe I'll strike it rich, come back loaded with nuggets. Item 2, 31 bucks even for my room at the Benjamin Franklin and a night on the town. The following morning... Well, I suppose I should have wondered why a big cargo plane should take off from a tiny airport far out of town... with only the pilot and me on board. Yep, I should have wondered.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment.
And now for another episode in the life of Sergeant Donald Bellwether. My husband.
Good morning, Mrs. Bellwether. Would my lady prefer to have her breakfast in bed this morning?
Oh, what a perfect husband. Thank you, darling.
Ah, here's the tray with the coffee, the toast, and the orange. Oh, fine. I forgot the orange juice. Hold the tray, honey. I'll be right back.
Darling, what happened?
Oh, I stubbed my toe in a corner of the dresser.
The National Safety Council was right.
The what?
Last night I read something in a National Safety Council pamphlet.
Oh, Reba, and... how can you sit there talking about a pamphlet when I'm dying a slow, tortuous death?
Oh, come over here, darling. I'm sorry.
All right. Now, what's this about the National Safety Council? Did they predict I would stub my toe this morning?
No, silly. It's just a coincidence. Only last night I read the statistics that proved that more home accidents occur in the bedroom of all places.
Yeah?
Not the bathroom or the kitchen or the home workshop. The bedroom.
Yeah. Okay, from now on, when I walk around the bedroom, I'm going to wear my combat boots instead of these open-toed hirachi.
Well, that might help, dear. But what everyone should be most careful of is taking medicine in the dark.
Okay, my living safety encyclopedia. I will now fetch your orange.
Aw, you're sweet. And it's just too bad that you nice men are so prone to accidents in the home. And the reason is because you brave men usually tackle the hazardous jobs around the house.
Hey, I'll remember those kind words as I slowly limp back to the kitchen.
One thing in your favor, though, Sarge. Married men stand a better chance of avoiding fatal accidents in the home.
Is that a fact?
Mm-hmm. You know, in one state, 75% of the men involved in home mishaps were unmarried.
Well, I'm sure glad I'm married.
Because the accident odds are better?
No, because I like my wife. Even when she first wakes up in the morning.
That's my Donald. That's my doll.
And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Midnight Sun Matter.
Within a few minutes after I met him at the airport far east of town the next morning, Cliff Murray had the big twin-engine speedcraft airborne, and we were heading north to Alaska.
And in case you're interested, Dollar, you're the co-pilot on this run.
Oh, are you kidding? The only things I've steered around the sky since the war have been Piper Cubs, small jobs.
You know something? When you get onto them, these babies are not only just as easy to fly, but a whole lot safer. Want to take over for a while?
Well, maybe later. Hey, how come you didn't take this big ship off at the Seattle-Tacoma International Airport?
Because of the cargo we have on board. Also, it was quicker and easier to get clearance. We're trying to make time on this trip. The boys up at the mine are a pretty worried bunch these days.
Oh, why?
There's a big glacier on one side of the property.
Oh.
Flows down to make the Kanakai River. When it gets warm enough, a couple of months in the year to melt.
That's so?
But there have been a couple of big ice quakes this spring. Just like earthquakes, only it's ice. And now that glacier's heading for the property.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's going to wipe out the airport and everything. Unless they can do something about it.
Like what? Divert the course of a glacier?
The engineers up there say they can do it. And we've got the stuff for them right here. This cargo we're toting.
What do you mean?
Oh, didn't you know?
Know what?
Well, we got enough TNT aboard to move a dozen glaciers.
Speaking of sitting on a powder keg, and this one had wings. But then after the first shock of realization wore off, well, I even took up Cliffy on his offer to handle the controls for a while. And he was right. The big plane behaved like a doll. By the time we reached Anchorage to pick up mail and food, why, I was all set to make the landing myself. However, with a cargo of TNT aboard, I was perfectly content to let Cliff set her down, which he did beautifully. Then within the hour, we headed north again over some of the wildest country I've ever seen.
Beautiful, though, Johnny. Its own way.
Yeah, I never realized there were so many lakes and streams up in this country, Cliff.
Most of them are loaded with fish, too.
Ah?
Yes, sir.
What is it?
I said greatest fishing in this man's world is right down there below us.
Oh, watch your language, brother. I'll have to strap on a chute and leave you to make the rest of the trip alone.
A fisherman, huh?
Yeah, you aren't kidding.
Yeah, one of my favorite spots, right?
Hey, what's the matter?
Nothing. Just a little twitch in my side. My belly. Doc said it was appendicitis last time, but he didn't want to operate unless... Holy... Baby, that was a sharp one.
Cliff, anything I can do?
No, it's going now.
Sure hope so.
Ah, sure, sure. Just came on kind of sudden, so... Hey, it's time to call the lads at the mine to be ready for us.
How big is the airport up there?
11,000 foot runway.
Really?
Sure. It's the only way to get stuff in for mines 100 miles around. Speedcraft 231, calling Consolidated. Go ahead, please.
Somebody on duty there at all times?
24 hours.
Roger, 231, go ahead.
We're over Fairbanks on the hour, Charlie.
Roger, Cliff, over Fairbanks at 1400 hours.
Then roll out the carpet. We'll set down between 1445 and 50.
Roger, Cliff, we'll be ready for you.
And that's that. In less than an hour, Johnny, we... Johnny, take over.
Sure, Cliff.
Never been this bad before.
Now, listen.
No, you listen. No matter what happens, take it easy. I'll tell you exactly what to... You can do it, Johnny. You can do it. Now, listen.
Act three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment.
With your permission, there's something I'd like to talk about for a minute. You know, too many times people try to escape from their responsibilities by having someone else take them over. There was Miles Standish, for example. He was much too busy to ask Priscilla to marry him, so he sent John Alden to pop the question for him. You know what happened. John ended up marrying the girl himself. Of course, if John had had a face like a flat tire instead of being the handsome guy he was, maybe Miles Standish would have married Priscilla instead. Well, actually, I don't know what got me started on this subject, and unless it was my thinking about people who represent somebody else. Take our State Department, for example. Being a representative is one of its biggest jobs. Through the Foreign Service, it helps the Justice and Treasury Departments handle immigration, narcotic, and quarantine problems. And the Secretaries of Agriculture and Commerce look to the Secretary of State to help keep their fingers on the pulse of foreign markets so they can keep the business firms and farmers of America informed on matters of import and exports. I guess the only connection between these facts and the courtship of Miles Standish is that, like John Alden, our State Department speaks for itself.
And now, Act Three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Midnight Sun Matter.
The rest of this report will have to come to you from the records of the airport there at Universal Consolidated Mining Corporation, far above the Arctic Circle. Aboard the big cargo plane loaded with TNT, the pilot crippled with pain, I was a little too busy to make notes to scribble any fancy dialogue. Here, then, is the story as recorded at the tower of the airport.
The time is 2:35.
Well, there goes the boss's plane to pick up his daughter in Fairbanks, Charlie.
Hey, Paul, isn't Cliff about due with 231? He said he'd sit down at a...
Speedcraft 231 calling Consolidated.
Hey, is that Cliff?
Speedcraft 231 calling Consolidated.
It doesn't sound like him. Hello, Cliff.
No, this is Johnny Dollar.
Dollar?
Yeah, it's his passenger. Go ahead, Johnny.
Cliff is... Well, look, I've had to take over for him. He's sick. Cliff is... Cliff will give me whatever instructions I need.
You sure you can make it, Johnny?
Johnny, this is Cliff.
Go ahead, Cliff.
Johnny can make it.
Well, what about that cargo, that TNT? Can you dump it?
I can't move to dump it, and Johnny can't leave the controls.
Okay, then, Johnny, we'll give you all the help we can from here.
Thanks, Charlie.
Have you passed the Snake River marker?
In about 2 minutes, I think.
Okay, now just remember, your letdown is on a heading of 035 degrees from that marker.
035 degrees from the Snake River marker, Roger.
And, well, now just take it easy, Johnny, and we'll get you down here okay.
Thanks, Charlie.
Well, it looks like we may have a problem on our hands.
Listen, if Cliff says Dollar can bring it down, he can. Just you take it easy when you talk with him.
Sure, Johnny. Stand by.
Take it, Paul.
Johnny, this is Paul Foster. Go ahead.
Paul, we're having some trouble getting our landing gear down. So I'm going to make some steep banks and try to get it down by centrifugal force.
Yeah, good.
You might get the ground crew to stand by, though. Because if we can't get the gear down that way, I guess we'll have to make a belly landing gear up.
Okay, Johnny, I got that. How much fuel have you got on board?
Johnny, this is Charlie again. Now, listen.
Easy, Johnny.
Oh, yeah. Johnny, I saw you make your pass. It appears the landing gear door is partially open, which may indicate it's jammed.
Any suggestions?
Paul again, Johnny. The only thing I can think of is try to snap the gear out by a sharp pull-up to give it centrifugal force.
I've tried that, Paul. Results are negative.
All right. Then before we consider you coming in for a belly landing with all that TNT aboard, I'd like to use up some of that fuel. Maybe some of our brains down here can think of something that'll help you out.
Okay, we'll go ahead with the regular procedures and whatever else we can think of, and then we'll give you another call.
Okay, Johnny.
The time is 2:41.
Johnny? Johnny, this is Paul again. Have you tried to shear the lock pin on that landing gear? Go ahead.
Negative. No, we haven't tried that yet. We want to make sure the doors were not jammed partially closed and perhaps make it impossible to get all the gear up again. You know, if we do have to make a belly landing.
Yeah. Okay. Johnny, have you got full hydraulic pressure?
Yes, that's affirmative.
Okay. Now, the crew chief isn't up here at the moment, but I'll ask him to come up, and he can discuss it with you.
Right.
Johnny, if it does become necessary to make a belly landing because of the setup they have for handling accidents, you might be better off to do it at Fairbanks. Have you thought about that?
I talked to Cliff here. He doesn't think they'd want us to try it with this TNT we've got aboard.
We'll radio to him and see. Meanwhile, if anybody comes up with any idea at all, we'll pass it on to you right away.
Okay. I'll give you a gas check in a few minutes.
Okay.
The time is 2:50.
Johnny, Don Wilkins, our chief engineer, would like to talk to you. I'll put him on the horn.
Johnny, this is Don Wilkins. Have you tried the landing gear handle up and down quite a few times to see if it extends any further at any time?
Yeah, we've tried it several times.
Well, I think I'd try it as many times as possible, Johnny. There could be something binding that may break loose. Now, there's something on it. There. Well, it comes off the gear door latches, all right, so it isn't a latch.
I'll try it a few more times.
The time is 3 o'clock.
Johnny, this is Paul. How's your fuel situation stacking up now?
We have about 950, about 960 pounds.
Well, for your information, Fairbanks have advised that they can't take your airplane there because they're jammed up and couldn't clear the field in time.
Well, yeah, it's okay. It doesn't look like we'd have enough gears to go there anyway.
Johnny, this is Don Wilkins again.
Go ahead, Don.
If you feather the number two engine, and then just as you unfeather it, slam the gear handle down, well, maybe the additional torsion that you get may free the gear.
Okay, Don, we've already tried that. We came up negative. I think we're stuck with that belly landing.
Johnny, this is Paul. We'll get everything ready for you. Are you VFR in this vicinity? You know, under visual flight rules?
Yes, affirmative.
Johnny, there's one more thing we'd like to have you try. And that is completely unload your hydraulic system and then try free-falling your landing gear. Did you get that?
I did that twice, Don. No luck with it. But we'll try it again.
All right, Johnny. Fine.
The time is 3:28.
Johnny, we're going ahead with preparations for a belly landing down here. I see you buzzed the field a couple of times, so you know how much room you've got.
You think it looks like much from up here?
Now, listen, we're going to foam the runway for you. You hear me? Put foam on it. We're doing it now, and that'll kill some of the friction. And if we can get enough on, it'll help against fire if you have any trouble.
How's the wind down there?
It's south, about 3 miles an hour, just light breeze.
Well, I want to know in case this thing slides off to one side or the other, right? I don't want to run down any of the other airplanes I can see down there. Not if we can help it.
Okay, Johnny, take a run directly over the runway and get the feel of it.
Will do.
The time is 3:31.
Johnny, we don't want to seem in a position here of telling you all your business, but I guess we've got to try everything anyone could think of.
Yeah, go ahead.
On this gear handle business, up and down, throw it in the up position. But just leave it there for a second, and then slam it down and leave it down for, oh, say, 30 seconds after you put it down. You get that?
Okay, we'll do that.
We hate to be giving you all this intelligence all the time, but if anybody gets an idea, we pass it on to you for what it's worth. But you've got to be the judge.
We're glad you fellas are with us.
The time is 3:46.
Johnny, how's your fuel now?
I wouldn't bank on it much longer.
All right. They're laying foam on the runway like crazy, but that foam's only going to last about 25 minutes. Now, assuming they started laying the foam at 30, you should land not later than 55.
Yes, well, okay, you give us a word when it's completed. We're going to make one low pass and take a good look at everything. Then we'll come in and land. Okay?
Roger, I got your remarks.
The time is 3:51.
Hi, Johnny. I just wondered how you are and how things look to you.
Okay. You got a doctor standing by to take care of Cliff?
Sure. Everything's ready for you. One comment. Listen. Do not feather the engines when you sit down.
Got it. We'll comply.
Okay, Johnny.
Okay, we're all set, Don. We're going to make a practice pass over the field prior to the final landing.
Okay, Johnny, I won't be talking to you anymore. Paul will take over on your approach and get you down. We're all set for you when you arrive. Good luck.
Yeah. Okay.
The time is 3:54.
1 minute, 48 seconds later, we've made a wheels-up landing. Cliff, the company doctor tells me his appendectomy was a complete success. A hard-bitten bunch of miners, did you say? Listen, those boys up in that lonely outpost are the salt of the earth. And as for trying to pull something on your insurance company, well, you should have seen how just one good load of TNT put that glacier back on its course. Yes, sir. I hope the vein of gold never runs out for those boys. Expense account total, including gifts for the lads who really brought that plane down, $600 even. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote today's story. Heard in our cast were Gene Tatum, Frank Nelson, Russell Thorson, Barney Phillips, Terry Bartell, and Forrest Lewis. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking.
Dollar has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
May 25th, 1958, yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The Midnight Sun Matter. Hope you enjoyed those. That, from what I understand, it's the first time they ever used foam during Flight 101, of course, and they, of course, used it again on yours truly, Johnny Dollar. I looked for some Jack Johnstone mentions of Flight 101. Can't find any. I thought he talked to us about that. Maybe not. We'll be back on October 22nd with a look at Gunsmoke and some reminiscences of people who were on that show. So we hope you will join us on Saturday night, the 22nd, for Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. We will be back, and now we'll get out of here and we'll chat about the show or anything else related to old-time radio. As a matter of fact, I bet you it deviates even from that. Time to chat. Thanks for joining us on Michael's Saturday Night Surprise.